Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Pulling Heartstrings, okay? Today is the 25th of the 4th month, 2025, and today we are proud heartstring pullers because we have a graduate within our community. We have Ndina, and Ndina has finally graduated. And for those that are on social media, you guys are going to see the post. She's going to send out the posts on the Matriarch's page and all of that and all of that, and you guys are going to see the success story. Ladies and gentlemen, the aim and objective to go into what you are doing, just go in. If you are looking at varsity right now and your first year and whatever, the one thing that you should know is that just finish what you started. Don't go change. Don't go do this. Don't go do that. If you started with something, you registered for something, just go in, finish it. You'll thank me later. Just finish it, no matter how bad it is, no matter how much it sucks, no matter how much it's not your passion. Just go in and do it and finish it. And then afterwards, right, when you have your own money, then you can start jumping from course to course and following dreams and whatever. So, ladies and gentlemen, initially this week we have been talking about emotional abuse, and we are diving into that one again with a TED talk from a renowned psychiatrist, right? And again, we as Eagle FM are not claiming ownership of this clip. We are just using it for educational purposes. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned.
Today, I am going to talk about the most overused, misunderstood, problematic words of our time. A phenomenon, a word that is shaping all of our destinies. That word is narcissism. Narcissism is a word that is being used to understand bad behavior everywhere, in national leaders, in heads of state, heads of corporations, fancy academic types, athletes, celebrities. We actually no longer recoil at their grandiosity, their entitlement, and their incivility. In fact, too many people award them grudging admiration for their successes. And that grants permission to everyone to replicate these abusive patterns of behavior with impunity. Now, things got confusing when people started using narcissism as a clinical term. It became a way of medicalizing bad behavior. It's actually not a diagnostic term. Narcissistic personality disorder is a diagnosis, but it's pretty rare because these folks don't show up to be diagnosed anyhow. So narcissism is, in fact, a personality pattern. It's a sort of way of relating to the world. It's an adjective to describe their style, much like we could describe someone as agreeable or stubborn or introverted. Some of these patterns are valued by society and others aren't. And the fact is, most people don't receive being called narcissistic as a compliment. It's just, however, a descriptive term. And no matter how much we turn our noses up at it, paradoxically, as a society, we reward it. Dr. Alan Francis was one of the architects of the diagnosis of narcissistic personality disorder, and he argues that we actually give badly behaved jerks an out when we call it a diagnosis. If a person's a jerk, then they're a jerk. Disliking a pattern of behavior doesn't make it a mental illness. That so-called jerk has to be experiencing problems in their lives and for their narcissism to actually be considered a diagnosis. So if we were to cobble together all the various things that make up narcissism, we land on a very uncomfortable summit. Narcissism is comprised of certain pillars, as I call them: lack of empathy, grandiosity, entitlement, superficiality, admiration and validation seeking, hypersensitivity, rage, and a tendency to manipulate and exploit people. It's confusing because they're simultaneously under-responsive. They tend to be emotionally aloof, cold, and distant, but then they're hyper-responsive. They have hair-trigger tempers that set off like that when their fragile egos get threatened. So narcissism, however, I believe is synonymous with pathological insecurity. The key to understanding the narcissist is that they feel constantly unstable and empty. Their grandiosity is actually an immature defense against these threats to them, their sense of self, and they're desperate for the world to keep validating them. On their good days, they look happy, they're great, they're grandiose, but on the bad days, the facade crumbles quickly, and we see disproportionate rage, shame, and vindictiveness. I became interested in narcissism through a couple of different pathways, but the most striking was the fact that more and more clients were coming into my office and talking about relationships in which their partners treated them with utter disregard, indifference, coldness. They lacked empathy. They would question their reality. They would lie to them. At times they were unfaithful. They were inconsistent. And no matter what they tried with their partner, it didn't get better. At the same time, I started working with more narcissistic clients. And would you know, nothing we tried really made things better. In fact, they just remained difficult people. And I don't think I'm that bad a therapist. So it was clear that these relationships were being kept in place simultaneously by hope and fear. Hope that someday it would get better if they kept trying harder, but fear that if they left these relationships, they'd be alone forever without a partner or even without a mother. And some of them had the fear that maybe this is as good as it gets. The world has become more insecure, and the reasons for that are varied. Gallup's annual Global Emotions Report said that in 2017 was the most miserable in about a decade. The report indicated that sadness, anger, worry, stress, and physical pain were more frequently endorsed last year than in the 10 years prior. Now, Gallup speculated on a variety of reasons for this, but let's spitball for a minute. Could it be that this increase in misery could reflect the increase in insecurity, incivility, and tolerance of narcissism our world supports? The increasing insecurity in our world and the platforms that capitalize on it, such as consumerism, have created optimal, fertile ground for narcissism to incubate and proliferate. When human value is driven entirely by external incentives such as success, then qualities such as empathy do not have a fighting chance because we no longer value them and they're no longer valuable. So why do we get pulled into these relationships? We're not flocking to narcissism because we love emotional coldness or invalidation or shallow people. We're drawn in because narcissism is seductive. I call it the three C's of narcissism: charm, charisma, and confidence. That's not to say that all charming and charismatic people are narcissistic. However, we do know that these traits are so seductive that we get drawn in, and they can blind us to the more venomous characteristics that are unfolding at the same time, such as entitlement, vindictiveness, or lack of empathy. So then once a person is in a relationship and it's uncomfortable and it's painful, why would they stay with a narcissist? All of us are vulnerable to those narcissistic charms. And in fact, we may be rendered even more vulnerable to sticking around for the abuse by a narcissist if we originated from family systems in which the patterns of narcissism were normalized, such as having a cold, authoritarian, distant, invalidating, or abusive parent. Our own insecurities render us vulnerable and also less able to climb out when the climate shifts from charm and charisma to invalidation and abuse. Most of us are great at giving second chances, and second chances are in fact the accelerant for narcissism at all levels. When we are in a narcissistic relationship, we make excuses. That's just how he is. He didn't really mean that. She means well. Ah, that's just her culture. And there's the rub. That's how this infectious virus of being in any form of narcissistic relationship, whether with an individual or a family or a company or a culture, can slowly proliferate and take over. Most of us issue second chances with zeal. Our storytelling and our culture is immersed in tales of hope, redemption, and forgiveness. And while that's all very healthy, in the wrong hands, hope and forgiveness may not represent an opportunity for growth or change or restoration, but rather permission to just keep things going as they are. Because with narcissists, forgiveness is interpreted as, hey, let's just keep the status quo. Have we created a world in which narcissism as a pattern, as a personality, is becoming necessary to succeed in the new world order? This is where we hit a bit of a problematic divide. The very qualities associated with material success are actually bad for our health. Because while these qualities may be festered and fostered by our cultures and our schools and our economies and our societies, they are never going to be good for our close relationships. And that doesn't just mean spouses and partners. That means parents, children, siblings, extended family, friends, colleagues. Narcissistic patterns undercut the core of what's necessary for healthy relationships. Those things include mutuality, respect, compassion, patience, genuineness, honesty, and trust. Things that are simply not possible with a system or a person which is narcissistic. And it's in that intimate relationship space where we see the most profound impacts of a narcissist, whether that be a spouse or a partner. A relationship with a narcissist is a gradual indoctrination. You slowly become inured to their lack of empathy, their tantrums, their rage, their insults, and their entitlement, their lies and their challenges to your reality. Their insulting words slowly become your self-talk. And before you know it, your new mantra becomes, I am not enough. Anyone who's had a narcissistic parent will acknowledge that it shaped the arc of their lives. It instilled an insecurity and a chronic jousting at psychological windmills. From an early age, narcissistic parents leave a legacy, including an inability to trust your own instincts, to safely enter close relationships, to trust your own abilities, and a lifetime can be spent trying to gain the notice of the aloof, detached, and disconnected parent. The proliferation of narcissism in leadership in our culture, governments, companies, and world has made very difficult workplaces. The narcissistic boss is the insecure tyrant. These are workplaces ruled by fear and subterfuge, abuse and vindictiveness, deceit and slippery ethics. And in the face of the Me Too movement, the top notes of narcissism pervaded all of the stories. The entitled and untouchable tyrant pillaging the workforce, and in most cases, with almost no consequences. The most painful realization is that narcissistic patterns are just not that amenable to change. At a minimum, for any change to occur, the narcissist has to recognize the harmful pattern of their behavior, then they have to want to change it, and then they have to put in the daily work of change. There is a small number of cases where that's kind of happened, but under conditions of stress and frustration, the usual issues of rage will pop up. The rubber band of personality returns to its usual shape and size. The small changes that could be made may not be enough to make a close, intimate relationship sustainable. And if somebody is not willing to recognize that they need to make changes because they're hurting other people, there's little likelihood they will make a change, but there is a likelihood they will continue to blame other people, the world, or you for their bad behavior. So that means that the only remaining strategies are to maintain your expectations and set boundaries, not to try to change that person or waste hope on the possibility of change, but to recognize that this is how it is and either accept it or slowly step away from it. Now, this is very individual, and it's not always possible. If it's your parent or your child who's narcissistic, you may not be willing to sever that tie. Finances, culture, children, or love can make walking away from a marriage or a romantic relationship seemingly impossible, and that's fine. But managing expectations on this pattern can protect you from the downstream effects of this ongoing abuse and allow you to construct a more realistic reality. Sadly, most of us put 90% of our hearts, minds, and souls into our most dysfunctional, unhealthy, invalidating relationships and save the little bit that's left for the people who are good and kind to us. It's time we flipped this skewed calculus and start giving the best of ourselves to our healthy and reciprocal relationships and really only give the bare minimum to the relationships that really aren't helping us grow. Perhaps that's a healthier way of negotiating these treacherous waters of narcissism without losing ourselves in the depths of self-doubt, and self-criticism. Now, this can be extended to our thinking about the world at large. It can be small fixes, such as turning off the polarizing discourses we hear and learning to measure our self-worth and the worth of others with new metrics of success, authenticity, compassion, kindness, and empathy. We can learn to tend to our own gardens and not get pulled into hostile interactions that benefit no one. So this begs the question, can there be happy endings where narcissistic or antagonistic personalities and cultures are concerned? I actually think there can be. The greatest challenge about happy endings in real life is that they rarely look like the ones we crafted when we're young. And it's easy to get stuck in our own old narratives. People who come from narcissistic families may feel as though they missed out on having a parent who is an ally or a supporter, even as they go into adulthood. People who married narcissistic partners may find themselves mired in a nightmare of emotional abuse or simply finding that they're actually alone despite being married. Few people write stories of their lives that build in disappointment. I have found that survivors of all kinds of narcissistic and antagonistic relationships actually can and do have happy endings. They just don't look like they thought. All of us are bigger than this epidemic of narcissism. Any of us can change the "you are not enough" narrative that still resonates. We can reparent ourselves. We can look at the entitled shenanigans of people who shriek, "Don't you know who I am?" and realize that you don't give a damn about who they are. Where there are scars, beautiful things actually can spring forth. Khalil Gibran writes, "Out of suffering have emerged the strongest souls. The most massive characters are seared with scars." Yes, the world is in fact becoming more narcissistic and insecure. Don't let the global epidemic of incivility infect you. Inoculate yourself. Find your communities. Find common ground with other people instead of living in polarization. Practice kindness and empathy even when other people are not. Choose your friends and your romances with care. Every life story can be a miracle or a tragedy. It just depends on how you write it. These days, with the world in such disarray, anyone who is surviving with their empathy unbroken, their heart sound, their integrity in place, and their sense of humor intact is nothing short of dauntless. Pushing back on narcissism is a human rights issue. All of us need to stop giving permission to narcissism and narcissists and start taking our lives, our souls, and our world back. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you have just joined us, this is Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is, of course, the 25th of the fourth month, 2025. Ladies and gentlemen, this week we have been talking about emotional abuse, and I felt that we needed to have a TED talk. We needed to have a conversation around narcissism, and we needed to understand that somewhere, somehow, we as a people and as a culture have enabled people into becoming monsters, vicious, vicious, vicious monsters. And these monsters hide and lurk under so many names. And you might be thinking that, no man, this person is just like this or just like that. But then it's in us saying that this person is just like this and this person is just like that, that this person doesn't actually change, doesn't grow, doesn't get out of it. And then also, she said something very profound, and she said that pushing back against a narcissist is a basic human right. And I do believe so too. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to participate in our conversation, the number is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio in case you would like to participate. So ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking about what the signs of abuse are. So we spoke about isolation. Then we talk about humiliation and criticism. And then we went on to talk about control and shame. That was yesterday. And then today we go into accusing, blaming, and denial. People who abuse others often try to create a hierarchy that puts them at the top and you at the bottom. So now, This just means that they like to put themselves at the forefront of things. They like to be at the top. They like to be the ones that go and scold first. They want to be the ones that, all right. They want to be the ones that make themselves seem like the innocent one. And then you are just the perpetrator. That's why in some cases when you are arguing with someone and you want to see if they are emotionally abusive, right? You're arguing with someone and you know in your fiber and your being that you are absolutely correct and this person has indeed done something wrong to you. What they do is turn around and gaslight you, and then when you react to that, they entertain an audience, or they bring in an audience to see how crazy you are. And that is why I believe that so many men, especially with men that are not serious, they have a tendency to play these games because they don't really care about you. So they don't really want anything to do with you. So why should they be nice to you? Why should they not gaslight you, manipulate you, or lie to you? There's a difference between that kind of guy and then the kind of guy that is really in it and he's really in the relationship. And there's a difference between the two, because the other one might be emotionally abusive, because he is not feeling you, because he's not into you, because he's not for you. You understand? And that's the reason that he's emotionally abusive. And then you find the ones that are being emotionally abused or become emotional abusers within stable, or what they constitute as a stable and consistent relationships. And this is usually something that gravitates from the beginning. It gravitates into something that's gnarly and nasty. And it could have been birthed out of resentment. It could have been birthed out of inadequacy. It could have been birthed out of anything, basically. And we morph and become these things. And some people have a tendency of becoming these things when they have experienced it themselves, where they come from. And where they come from doesn't necessarily only depict an image of their childhood. But basically, we're talking about every single thing that is in your past that could have affected you in such a way that it's something that you can't shake off. Yes, our lives, or the people that we are, and our characters and our personalities are usually shaped by our childhoods and the traumas and the lack thereof. Some, if you are traumaless, then great. You know, it usually comes from there. But I also do believe, because I've been reading up on Carl Jung's, the shadow theory, I do also believe that, there are some things that, or some traits, something, some characteristics that we pick up along the way that also resemble something, and they leave a stench as well. That is why you can find that somebody has been perfectly normal for a very long time, and then they hit 25 and they experience something traumatic, and bam, they are never coming back from that. It is a mental disorder of some sort. It is somebody just checks out completely. Like, they are just not home at all. And I've seen this where somebody is such an achieved person, and then you find them, and even when you look into their eyes, you can see that the person that you once knew or the person that you once loved is no longer here, and you need to make room for the fact that they are not going to be occupying the space that you have held for them. So the reason that we're talking about emotional abuse is because many of us go through it, and many of us are indeed perpetrators. We are indeed perpetrators of something that is so detrimental and so heartbreaking, and also has such a big impact on other people's lives, even our own lives. But with us, onshiningi, like, even if you are doing it, it doesn't affect you as much as the person that it's being done to. Right? So at the end of the day, not unless there's a retaliation, or not unless this person also turns around and does something else that is just equally as bad, then you guys are just toxic and you guys are just detrimental for one another. The reason we're talking about this is because I feel like we should shine light on this. We should talk about it. We should really honestly expose the elephant in the room so that we can find peace and we can find grounding within understanding and knowing that, hey, we out here and we are trying our best not to be the monsters that people once were to us. The only way we can change against the enemy, or the only way we can defeat the enemy, is by understanding the enemy. And understanding the enemy is knowing the enemy's cards. The only way we can know the enemy's cards is by studying the enemy. So we're studying the enemy. So when we're talking about the next characteristics, which is a characteristic number four, and number four, and yes, number four and five are going to be our final conversations around emotional abuse, because we have officially come to the end of it, and we are going to summarize. We might summarize tomorrow, but we'll see how far our lesson goes. So, under accusing, blaming, and denial, people who abuse others often try to create a hierarchy that puts them at the top and you at the bottom. For example, or part of these examples include jealousy. They accuse you of flirting or cheating, or say you'd spend all your time with them if you truly love them. They have this tendency of jealousy. Now, this jealousy, right? This jealousy is an unhealthy kind of jealousy, because we all have this little bit of jealousy, but it's in what we do with the jealousy that determines what type of people we are. It is how we handle the jealousy that determines what kind of people we are. But you find now with an abusive person, for example, they have an excessive jealousy. So part of it, and this is something that I've noticed also with people that, that practice infidelity, right? People that are cheaters have a tendency of accusing you of cheating. And this is most part of the telltale sign. So when your partner accuses you of cheating, then that's when you should start being alert about their cheating. But sometimes this person is not cheating. This person is just so insecure about you leaving them, or you finding someone better, because they have an inadequacy within them, right? That makes them feel like they're not enough, they're what, and they don't actually verbalize it. What they do in turn is break you down to make themselves feel better. So they would rather put you at the bottom of the shoe and stamp on you instead of lifting you up and making you better. That's why you can find that in some relationships, somebody is flourishing and growing and becoming wonderful and doing everything that they ever wanted to do in life, and then the other one is stagnant. But it's usually, this stagnant nature is usually caused by the spouse. So I always say that you chisel me, I chisel you. Good evening to you.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening, how are you?
Oh, good. Well, I'm calling.
You are calling Eagle FM, my friend.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh.
You are not going to call that.
Yes, no, I was looking for somebody, then actually now it's very much good. Yes, you're having a nice topic. What is that one?
We're talking about emotional abuse.
Emotional abuse?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's emotionally something which coming where the brain and the heart and the reactions. Mm-hmm. You see, something which is not a good to the humans, that, you know, like fair treatment, unfair treatment, you know, that is something kind of like I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, my love was been abused, and my wife was being really, I'm a victim of being abused.
Mm-hmm. Who used to abuse you?
Many, you see, the law even of the law, it's the abuse me for quite time, man.
Mm-hmm.
You see what in my history background, you know, there was some allegation on my life.
Mm.
So, well, then I was being forced to admitting guilty.
Mm.
You see, then authority that time told me that, no, you know what? You can just admitting the guilty, and therefore we can make a backup of you once the court of any inquiry or board of inquiry coming on, and then we can defending you on that. And then later on, it's come off on tantamount that I lost my job due to the fact of that admitting
guilty,
of guilty. You see, that is a, so, although where the board of inquiry was conducted against me, So I give that, no, yes, I admitting this guilty because of an advised by the authorities. Mm. A person who has been appointed as my immediate supervisor,
mm-hmm.
that I must admitting that. And that is one, the Schedule 1 offense. Then I lost my job because the Schedule 1 offenses which was being arrogated on me,
mm.
where the material evidence was not examined by my lawyer.
Yes.
And therefore that is a really, I still have that in my heart.
Mm.
And really that is, clamp down my career,
yes.
was I was in that time, you
mm,
see?
Mm.
And therefore that, you know, because I can see that this is abuse, it's, you see, it's coming and bring me on a hopeless,
mm.
progressive in my life,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That is, you know, the people who has been trusted to helping people who's under control of them,
mm-hmm.
and they come up with the subject that, you know, in order to make this person suffer or mm-hmm. to be on the dustbin,
yeah.
must be convinced on that way. But mm-hmm. now, the guard will prosecute it, although the power of authority of that will be given, you see, that's the problem. You know, my dear sister, I really been abused.
Mm.
Secondly, that an abuse, it mm-hmm. was that, you see, there was an accident while I was involved,
yes.
as in a law protecting,
mm-hmm.
and she, suspect was driving under influence of alcohol,
mm-hmm.
and then after that, the person was tried to running or flying the scene,
mm-hmm.
and subjected that confronting him, I told him, even audible, demanding him that, please, what you're doing is not good. Wait the law enforcement agency to come and visit the things.
Yeah.
You see, what is that about? You see, where the investigator coming on, the suspect, you see, is running away, then I confronting him, who fell down into the ground, and the person who has been sustained, and plus minus injury, is not that injury of that nature that the person who has been, you see,
because not that is a serious injuries. Mm.
Yes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After well, the other subordinated supervisor helping the victim to open the case against me.
Mm-hmm.
And in my self-defense, I'm coming on, I'm explaining the law of court, and unfortunately, I was not having a lawyer defending myself,
mm-hmm.
and those people also was there, there was, you see, you know, that in the competition of that person, let me, you know, these guys at least to be in, you know, mm-hmm. in the problem.
Yeah.
After a while, I explained to the Court of Justice, and I try, you see, even that I was want to be appeal the case, but it threatened me up to I was being locked up and I was being in the bar as convicted of the things of mm. that which is, was the ground of justifiable. That means that the court was, you see, I was being betrayed according to that. And that is an abuse.
Yeah.
It's coming to that. In the environment where I was operating, there was people whom was an against with me. Let mm. me tell you, imagining a person I was in the career of that 15 years
mm.
with that career, without know any things that I was being like departmentally or I was in criminal whatsoever, but mm. the people was not considered, you see, less defensive person myself, I was being locked up. And then, you see, I can see this is was being and humiliated of my career,
mm-hmm.
and it was humiliated of my progressive of my life.
Mm.
So then when I end up with that in the bar, yes, I went to the facility collection in Oruno.
Mm-hmm.
When I went in the facility in Oruno,
mm-hmm.
yes, I do respecting the authority and the officer of this Oruno. And you see, they was in process of searching me and whatever. You know what?
Yeah.
They make me a frog jabbing naked and so on.
Mm.
So, well, I do understand. I'm not disputing about that.
Mm.
So after a while, You see, I was not prepared for that frog jumping.
Mm-hmm.
And my muscles was tired. Mm-hmm. You see, if you have not been warm up,
you've
been sustaining the injury on that. Because if you could see the soccer players,
yes, when they are playing soccer, first.
They used to first, before there's
the game, a dispute, yes.
They make a warm up. You see, that is giving a wrongly addressing to the collecting services. What was in Oruno that time. You see, that's why now to me I said, oh, in the world, there's no truth. There's no truth. I can see there's some people also which has been behind the cell or behind the bar of that, because of the mistake that of self-defensive. Understand? You see, plus that, I don't know. You see, and also need, I saw that maybe I need some psychiatrist to at least to feed me and to give me a moral support of that.
Yeah.
You know that having a criminal record in life is something which is really provocable, because whenever you apply something, you could say, you know that one, that one is a Mike Tyson, he's it's a brutality person, that one, you know that kind of nature.
Yes.
You see, on that way, we're having people which we are being like, people who have been, you see, have had an agenda with other people.
Yes.
Is it bad like that?
Yes.
It's not good, really. Because one day tomorrow we meet and I said, oh, can you see this? Can you see like that? How could I have been, can I have been having a warm a welcoming for such a person?
No.
Not at all. Let me tell you, before that also, let me say, of discharging me from the work.
Yeah.
You see, it was not only me was happening on that way. It is happening to 3-4 people. And you see, that person was not being a person of the leadership quality of to reading people. Understand what I mean?
Yeah.
You see, because two people, it's not happening to me only. I can recall one gentleman was also working for a trafficking officer, Nampo. He was being subjected to that. He was admitting guilty, and what it has been led him down to being resourcefully resigned because of the Shadow 1 offenses.
Yeah.
See? But you see that the people, they are not being appreciated of the contribution of the years. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I've been contributed for how many years? 15 years in the services, I've been a lot of successful operations, and proved to me that to be that I am really a hero of the career of what I was doing.
Yeah.
He said, we're coming on that time, you know, of oppressing of these people of assassination. We went in there. We protected the territory integrity, and we brought in those suspects to the justice of the republic.
Yeah.
We're talking about the assassination which was performed in the eastern, in the Caprivi, high prison.
Yeah.
You see, those was the young blood fresh like me. We went there. We engaged it, we put in them whatever. Secondly, again, we come in an operation, recovering of the character which was in the, was stolen from the commercial farmers there. We're talking of Itoto, we're talking about Hobabes, we're talking whatever. We come in there and get an operation. We also, you see, we detecting illegal arm and whatever. Who are those? The people that are not going in the file of the people. And find out who is this person? Or is this person needed to be at least supportive or to be whatever? Their child to be coming only that the inspector general that time to the decision they took. Yes, this setting. The board of inquiry are those people, because you know that this person is a person, you know, because I was putting his brother in the chain of the assassination. So they assign that person, you know that this person, yes, you know. We haven't had an agenda of things, and our authority, they cannot investigate it. We have intelligence which can go through why this person happening in this way. We cannot have those kind of ingredients to examine and to find it out, or to feed, or to secretary, to rehabilitate a person.
Yeah.
You know, my dear sister, I'm telling you, in the reality, truth is being counted to some people who are true. You see, emotional abuse is coming in such a way.
Yes.
And then, you see, where you find yourself. You find yourself in garbages.
Mm-hmm.
You find yourself in the spillover of the rights of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
the future which is being cut it off, you
yes.
know. That is, you know, that's emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, if it's coming, people, they're appreciating the good, they're enjoying the earth, the good things brought by the people,
mm-hmm.
and that the wrongdoing, single mistake, which I'm sure to be seen, or the material evidence to be brought on the table,
mm-hmm.
you see, those are the things. Why? The people that make the decision to be a person to be discharged, a person telling the board of inquiry that I was convinced
mm-hmm.
by who station mm-hmm. commander or Andrews or warrant officer who have mentioned specified people.
Yes.
You see, now you must come up to reappeal, wasting of time to reappeal and whatever. We just used to give that in the hand of God. Emotional abuse, man, is having kind of, you know, that's having a lot of forms, understand what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, yes, it does.
Can you have some question to me or anything to highlight it me to an attention of you?
Right now, I want to ask you, how are you doing emotionally? Are you still angry? Where are you emotionally? How do you feel emotionally?
We're learning the history, mm. to learn the past and the continual present and whatever.
Mm.
I feel that I was betrayed.
Mm.
I feel that, according to that, our Police of National Reconciliation, according to what we know, he said, let's be forgiving them,
mm.
but we cannot forget
mm.
what's happening. You understand?
Yes.
You cannot forgive because we are Christianity.
Mm.
We are the people who, yes, I have to forgive.
Mm.
You see? But although there's no opportunity will come again,
mm.
unless maybe Almighty God will be driving that. You see,
mm.
as a Christianity, you can accept, but in outlooking, meeting on the street with those kind of an errant person,
mm.
I not appreciate it. I say, greeting me, I turn him off and I can just look at him and I go. You see,
yeah.
I don't forget. You don't understand that.
Mm.
You see, those are the things. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
You see, we having the laws which has been in place up to now, which was inherited from the colonial masters,
mm.
which has been driving, which has been used even in the forces.
Mm.
You see, if it's coming to that kind of the Schedule 1 offenses,
yeah.
yes, you have to see
mm.
how many rescue I did to the need of my client.
Mm-hmm.
How much successful? How, you see, sometimes people of like whom am I talking about? Yes, I've been awarded certificate of appreciated what I achieved while I detected drugs. Then Transkara Hali Highway while I was in Jose Akutako. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I was giving the highly welcome. That yes, you did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Certificate of appreciation, long service certificate, the bribery. Or a certificate.
Mm.
You see? You know, I said thank you. And you see, that's why sometimes we lose the champion and the defending of the law in this kind of nature. Understand?
Mm, mm.
To coming back to the collection facility, yes, you mm. know, people, there was like the bullying.
Yeah.
You know? That's so called. Hey, Sergeant, now he's been in the...
In the
no,
cells, yeah. And also, first of all, as a person that has been in law enforcement, are you even supposed to be with the civilian criminals? Are you not supposed
yes.
to be? Are you not supposed to be at CS?
Okay. Well,
after you're prosecuted.
Okay, you see, let me tell you that you know because of the safety. Of the corrective service, they are professionally some of administration of them. I conquer of them.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there's no an attack, but the possibility of an attack, you know that it will be a possibility that God can help. Mm-hmm. But you will be together with those whom you was used to being arrested them and putting on the bar. Yes, and they humiliating you.
Yeah.
Psychologically, all you support myself that, no, I'm coming here, let's finish my punishment as required by the unfair justice, injustice, injustice on that matter to my degree, point of my view.
Yes.
Understand?
Yeah.
Yes. You see, no, that is only God's protection. Understand? Yes. No, there's no any, except maybe in custody, it's well, like I said, you have been classified that no, you cannot be together with those because you, like security officers and the ex-policy and NDF and other also higher figure, business personnel, or the, you see, the member of parliament, politician, those kind of natures, you see, appear and they're presenting, So those are, yes, in custody police. But, you know, the custodies need to be evaluated on a good standard. Because, you see, gathering, disturbing other of, inmate freedom and that kind of, we are waiting to try prisoner, it needs to be like that. But, you see, it's needed also to keep your integrity very much good, safely, and then, you see, you have been self 50 people and whatever, you see, that's kind of, you know, but anyway, that is how. Democracy must play a great role to uplift or bring the situation of a system there. Because if it's going, and with the time, maybe because I having a time to explain why I say that, you see, it will take me a time. Yeah, okay. Well, those are the emotional abuse which I'm making in my life.
Yeah.
You see, that is, so far, let's give some of my fellows to participate in a wonderful discussion.
Thank you so much.
You, Eagle FM. I like you, man. Your educative topics always.
Thank you so much for contributing.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Ciao. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about emotional abuse. And like we said, emotional abuse is not only for certain classes of relations. It could be in the workplace. It could be with people that you are in romantic relationships with. It could be with siblings. It could be with people that you are in close proximity with. Like, for example, emotional abuse does happen in the workplace. And also, what our previous caller was talking about is the fact that he has gone through emotional abuse in terms of what he has gone through with his job and also the losing of his job and also, his defense team in a minor offense or a schedule one offense. I don't know now. There's two schedules, I guess. Schedule one, schedule two, schedule 10. Schedule one offense, and he was made to plead guilty. He was made to plead guilty, to lessen the sentence by his legal advisor or his supervisor or something like that. And this person now manipulated him into believing that it was all going to go well, and then it didn't go well. And even in the event that he said that this is what he was told, this is why he pleaded guilty or this is why he took up the guilty stance, even though he explained everything and mentioned names and all of that, where an investigation could have went through and been done, where the necessary people could have been called in and spoken to or whatever. It could have been redone. It could have been reprimanded. It could have went well, right? It didn't go, and he ended up having to serve time in Oluno Correctional Facility. And also the emotional abuse that he has gone through there, including a physical injury that he had gone through because he was forced to strip down and
get nude and then do the squats and the frog jumps, because some inmates do carry contraband within their bodies, and this is mandatory. It's only that he didn't warm up and stretch, so he sustained an injury from that particular thing. That was the physical injury that he had to deal with, and the emotional injury that he had to now face being with the same people that he put behind there. So he was in law enforcement. So being with the same people that some of these people he had put them in behind bars for crimes that they have committed. And now he is forced to serve time within the facility, because of something that he really didn't do. And I think that that is why sometimes, when we look at inmates, it's so easy for us to say that this person is guilty because they were found guilty, but there's so much and there are so many underlined issues that are not really looked at or faced. And in this not facing them, we really don't fully understand what has happened. But ladies and gentlemen, this is just another indication of what our people are going through. And I love it when our audience comes through and participates. I love it when our audience comes through and shares experiences from their own lives, because it gives a sense of camaraderie and it also gives a sense of you are not alone. So ladies and gentlemen, when we talk about emotional abuse, for example, we talk about the suffering of men, the suffering of women. We talk about a silent suffering that cannot go silent any longer. So we need to talk about it. We need to talk about it. And the more we talk about it, right, the more we can find a way to resolve it, to solve it, and to maybe eliminate it. But for now, ladies and gentlemen, as we proceed with our conversation, we were talking about emotional abuse and we were talking about accusing, blaming, and denying. The first example is that the abuser is usually jealous, and the second one is that the abuser usually uses guilt. They might try to guilt trip you into doing something by saying things like, you owe me this, look at all I've done for you, in an attempt to get their way with you. So emotional abuse is also these people that say things like, yeah, but if it wasn't for me, then you wouldn't be who you are. If it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have that job. So everything that I have done for you, at least you can do this one favor for me. And whether or not you like it, you end up doing it because you're doing it out of guilt, and they are forcing you to do it with manipulation, because this in itself is a manipulation tactic. It is using guilt. The next one, unrealistic expectations. They expect you to do what they want when they want you to do it. They think you should always prioritize their needs, do things according to their standards, and you absolutely shouldn't hang out with your friends, family, and anyone else. That is why we're talking about isolation, right? That is why isolation is the pentacle. Isolation is the pentacle because the unrealistic expectations cannot fathom and cannot grow in an environment where you have other people. But when you don't have other people and you're in isolation, this person expects you to make them the messiah of your life. So goading and blaming is the next one. People who manipulate and abuse typically know just how to upset you. But once you do get upset, they pin the blame back on you. After all, it's your fault for being so sensitive and so incompetent. Right? So they know how to rile you up. They know how to beat you up. They know what buttons to push. And when you react and retaliate against this pushing and this aggression, right? You are now labeled and the tables are turned against you and said that, yeah, but you are overly sensitive. And this is, everything is happening because of you. And then the next one is denying the abuse. When you express concerns about their behavior, they might deny it, seemingly bewildered at the very thought, like, oh my goodness, I would never emotionally abuse you. I would never be insensitive. I would never gaslight you. They make it seem like, oh my goodness, I would never do that. But it is most all part of it. It's part of it, especially when you just raise your concerns. Like, I feel like, lately in this relationship, it has been emotionally abusive. It has been what? And this is the part where they just can't believe that you would think that of them, and this usually leaves you feeling bad for even thinking like this. But why would you feel bad for something that's not happening? Not unless it actually is happening. And then the next one is denying the abuse. They deny the abuse. When you express concerns about their behavior, they may deny that it is happening, that it is even a reality or it's a possibility. And then they might also say and just get angry quickly and call you a difficult person. Okay, the next one is tribulation. When you explain how much something they said or did upset you and hurt your feelings, they accuse you of overreacting or misunderstanding the situation. Now, the thing with misunderstanding the situation is, why am I always misunderstanding this situation? If I'm always misunderstanding every single situation, right, then that would mean that the conveyor of the message where I misunderstand it is intentionally choosing to convey the message in such a way that I'd automatically misunderstand it. And that is now, if you have a dirty mind like me, because I can turn the tables quickly. I can turn the tables quickly because I can spot you, because we all, like some of us wrote the rule book. We choose a different path, but we are very much capable of being bad and nasty people. We are very much capable. So in this case, right, if you are always apparently misunderstanding the situation, then the question that would arise is, why am I always misunderstanding the situation? It's either you're implying that I'm absolutely stupid and incompetent of comprehending basic communication skills, or you are intentionally choosing to communicate in a language that I am incapable of fathoming and understanding and comprehending. Ergo, you are putting it on me to decipher what you are thinking and saying, instead of saying it in such a way that I would understand it from the very beginning. So I would now assume that it is your intention to mislead me, because you understand that I have an understanding problem. So right now, at this point, I feel unsafe because you are intentionally choosing to mislead me. But then again, no high end, no ho, no psychologist, no ho. So those are the types of rebuttals that you are expecting when you are dealing with a matriarch. Because how? I cannot misunderstand 10 times. Like, why? Why am I misunderstanding basic English, basic Oshindonga, basic Afrikaans? Why am I misunderstanding this? I know I'm not stupid. I know I am very capable of comprehending human emotion and human interactions. So why am I always constantly misunderstanding? Not unless, right, you are being trivialent. Not unless you are being malicious in one way or another. So when we go to trivialness, or when we go back to this one, it says that when you explain how much something they said did upset you. So it's usually that thing of, yeah, but when you called me that name in front of people, that really upset me. And then they would turn around and say that, yeah, no. But the thing is that I didn't mean for it to be upsetting. You just didn't understand what I was trying to say. The question would be, what were you trying to say? What is it that you were trying to say that I would misinterpret to be an insult that made me feel bad? What is it that you were trying to say? Because if you know what you were trying to say, why didn't you just say it in the way that you were trying to say it in the first place? Instead of choosing the way you articulated yourself. Not unless it was intentional and it was malicious. Okay, the next one is blaming you for their problems. When things go wrong, they always blame you. If only you'd been a more loving child. Hey, this is now your mother blaming, right? If only you were a more loving child. Or if only you were a more cooperative employee or cooperative colleague. If only you were more, a more supportive partner or a better partner, they might say their lives would be fantastic if you were those things. But why was your life not fantastic prior to meeting me then? If you are such a fantastic being by yourself. So these are questions like, okay, so if you are being blamed for somebody's life's misfortunes, and like, yeah, I just feel like I'm not getting a job because you are not sending me money to go and make my copies. Like, but why is that my problem? I'm not your mother. I'm not your father. Why is that my problem? Why do I become the problem? Yeah, I just feel like you didn't coach me enough for the interview and that's why I didn't get it. Like, but that's not my responsibility. Are you paying me to coach you for interviews? So why should I pick up that kind of blame? And last but not least, it is destroying and denying. They might throw your phone down and break it. Lose your car keys or destroy other important possessions, then they deny it or say it happened accidentally. Now, I don't understand how breaking a window as a grown person is intentional, is accidental. Especially if something went through the window and it wasn't a ball, because, you know, we play soccer with the balls and the balls break the windows, but you are an adult and you're telling me that you broke the window by accident. You broke my phone by accident. How? How is it by accident? Ladies and gentlemen, these are the things that we're dealing with when it comes to emotional abuse in relationships and places. And right now we're going to go to a TED talk by Dr. Timothy Golden that talks about the emotional abuse that men are suffering. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned and enjoy. And disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen, we as Eagle Media House are not under any circumstances taking ownership and rights of these clips that we are playing. We are solely using them for information purposes and also for the conversation that we are having.
Worlds is seen and external. It is the world of our five senses. Thank you very much. Human beings simultaneously inhabit two worlds. The first of these worlds is seen and external. It is the world of our five senses, the world of sights and sounds and all that whistles and goes bump in the night. This is the world of physics, where life is somewhat predictable. I often tell my students that no one breaks the law of gravity, for if you try to break the law of gravity, chances are the law of gravity will break you. Instead, we find ways through the manipulation of mechanistic, inexorable natural laws to comply with the laws of gravity so that when we fly in an airplane, we do so with some ease and arrive at our destination safely. The second of these two worlds is internal and unseen. It is the world of our thoughts, our emotions, and our feelings. We have a bad habit of privileging what we see and ignoring what we don't see. And this habit becomes especially problematic when we consider the fact that what is unseen and thus important, or I'm sorry, that what is unseen and what is neglected is often what is most important. For example, if all of the oxygen were sucked out of this room right now, all of us would see how important it is, but we do not see oxygen. Tonight, I want to tell you a story of a man who lived long enough to know that what was unseen and important, that is his inner life, the life of what the Greeks called the psuche, or the soul, that though so important to him, this life was neglected, terribly neglected. Neglected by his spouse, neglected by the larger society, and neglected to such a degree that it led him on more than one occasion to the point of considering taking his own life. As you listen to the story of this man, I want you to think very carefully about the men in your lives. I want you to think about your fathers. I want you to think about your husbands. I want you to think about your brothers, your uncles, and your nephews. This man begins his life in a household that some might rightly call hyper-masculine. He grows up the youngest of seven children in a home with three brothers and three sisters. He affectionately calls himself the tiebreaker. And growing up in a household with a father and three brothers was sort of like growing up with four fathers. And growing up in a household with a mother and three sisters was sort of like growing up with four mothers. And this household was, by today's standards, I would venture to say, rather chauvinistic. The men had more important things to do than cook or clean. After all, the men had to watch football on Sunday. And as this man's father saw it, it was the task of the women to tend to the men and make sure that they had food to eat while they watched the game. And one of the cardinal rules in this man's household was that men were never supposed to cry. Men were never supposed to show emotion. Men were never supposed to cry or show emotion, because to do so was to demonstrate to the rest of the world, which, by the way, was always out to get you, that you were weak somehow. And in a strange sort of way, this man grew up in a household where he never once saw his father cry. Now, as he grew up and moved through high school, this hyper-masculine mentality sort of served him well. He excelled on the football team in high school and bears the distinction to this day of being the only male in his family who played on a football team that actually won a league championship. And through all of the challenging practices in the hot summer sun before the season started, and through all of the bumps and bruises of playing football in high school, his father's advice and the advice of his brothers served him well. Ignore how you feel, even when it hurts. On the football field, this works nicely because it means you're tough. It means you're a team player. And so his ethics, his value system of being tough served him well through his adolescent years, through college, and then he got married. And when he got married, he carried his ideas of masculinity with him into the marriage. When he got married, he noticed that his spouse seemed preoccupied with his physical appearance. And from time to time, she would comment on how displeasing it was to her. And she would comment on how unattractive he was to her in the most intimate of ways. She would remark to him about how other men who she knew in the past that she never even considered dating, let alone marrying, were far more attractive than he was. But because he had always been taught to ignore how he felt, he kept going. And it was just like the bumps and bruises that you experience on the football field. Your leg may hurt, but you keep playing because you have to take it for the team. You have to be a team player. And so he ignored the way he felt and he kept going. And not long into his marriage, he began to see very clearly that his feelings of inadequacy and a profound sense of worthlessness began to affect him deeply. And he started to experience intense bouts of depression. But he was always told to ignore how he felt. He was always told not to cry, for to cry would make him less of a man. In fact, he was told men don't even talk about things like thoughts or feelings. And this pattern continued throughout his marriage to the point where every 6 months to a year, he could, with some accuracy, pinpoint the moment in time when he would be confronted with an episode of rage and hostility about what he looked like and how unattractive he was to his spouse. He continued and persisted, always ignoring how he felt, until one day, the hostility and anger that confronted him reached crisis proportions as his spouse committed what some would suggest was the ultimate act of betrayal in withdrawing completely from the physical side of the relationship and unilaterally declaring celibacy until such time as he made himself more attractive for her. Now his feelings of worthlessness have reached a boiling point. And now he begins to reach out for help. And for the first time, about 3 years ago, this man in our story begins to run internet searches about how he's feeling. He couldn't talk about it because his father's voice still echoed from his grave. Men don't talk about things like that. And as he typed in the Google search field, feelings of worthlessness, sadness, depression, he came across a definition of emotional abuse. And the definition of emotional abuse that he found was an ongoing process where one person systematically diminishes, then destroys the inner life of another. Remember how we inhabit two worlds? One outer and external and seen, and the other internal and unseen. He realizes now that he has a name for how he's feeling. And then he looks up the symptoms. And chief among the symptoms of emotional abuse is a fixation of the abuser on some physical characteristic of the abused. And it says that this fixation may persist in the worst cases for decades. And as he thought about it and as he reflected on it, he came to understand that her persistent demands for him to lose weight and change his appearance to make himself more attractive bore the hallmark symptom of emotional abuse. He then came across others which were menacing tones and looks, and he realized that recently the anger and hostility had been ratcheted up to a level that he had never seen before. And so now he sees multiple symptoms of emotional abuse and he's in crisis. So he reaches out. And one of the first places he reaches out to is his church. And he discovers quite tragically that his church is woefully unprepared to deal with abusive situations in terms of emotional abuse in marriages. Now, for the first time, he understands what he heard all of the women in his church say for decades, which was, I'm in an abusive relationship and the church can't help me. Now, for the first time, this man who had been taught his entire life to ignore the way he felt, he understood the plight of women in a way that he had never understood before. All his church could do was tell him to stay married and work it out. And then, fortunately for him, there was one small church about 2.5 hours south of where he lived that provided him a place through a small men's group to share how he was feeling. And he discovered that he was far from being the only one who experienced what he had been experiencing for so long. In fact, as he engaged other men in conversation, he realized that their inner lives had been disregarded as well. Since then, no less than 5 or 6 men have come up to him and said, every time you tell me what happened to you, I'm thoroughly convinced that you are telling my story. He got to a place where he thought that his only way out, having turned to his church for help, having turned to certain male friends for help and being disappointed, he got to a place where the only thing he thought he could do to relieve himself of this pain was to end his life. And on more than one occasion, hatched a plot to do exactly that. This plot reached crisis proportions when he came to see that the thoughts of suicide no longer bothered him, but rather gave him peace, because contrary to popular belief, people who kill themselves are not upset. They actually feel quite calm because they know the next step will bring them relief. He sought a clinical intervention and was talked off of the proverbial ledge. And now this man is at a much better place. As this man has talked about his story with other men, they have, as I said a moment ago, said to him, you're telling my story. I want to take you back to your fathers, to your husbands, to your uncles, to your brothers, and to your nephews. And I have a sense that as I talk and deliver these words to you tonight, I'm probably telling some of their stories too. I know the man in our story quite well. That man is me. I hope that as a result of something I've said tonight, someone, some man, somewhere, somehow, some way, will cease to suffer in silence because someone has listened in a way that has allowed them to be touched by the story, not necessarily of themselves, but by the story of the men or man in your life. The aim of tonight's talk is to raise awareness and to bring attention to what is so often neglected, that is to say, to the inner life of a human being. I'm confident that if we give the inner life of a human being this sort of attention, that men and women will no longer have to suffer in silence. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, 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 welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, suffering in silence, suffering in silence, suffering in silence. When we talk about emotional abuse, right? I think that it's wonderful for us to give these opportunities for stories such as this one, where we are definitely breaking the silence around emotional abuse, where we are breaking the silence around tragic things, where we are talking about our lives in its true essence and understanding that our conversations echo in the hearts and the ears of those that need it. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't put ourselves at the forefront because it is fun and it is beautiful. We put ourselves at the forefront of things so that somewhere, somehow, somebody can relate, and we can take away that sense of hopelessness and despair, that sense of I don't belong, that sense of I'm not enough, that sense of I am inadequate, that sense of tragedy and pain from somebody by having a sense of camaraderie, like, hey, hi, I'm the matriarch and I've gone through this. And hey, I'm a doctor and I've gone through this. Hey, I'm hoo-hoo and I've gone through this. Ladies and gentlemen, nobody actually stands up and says that, you know what, I want to go and talk about my very embarrassing things, because there is shame. There is so much shame in abuse, ladies and gentlemen. There is so much shame, because the shame that comes with it is that you perpetrate yourself as somebody that could have done better, would have done better, would have seen it, would have been able to walk away, would have, and now you live in the shame of staying for so long and you don't want to talk about it. And sometimes you don't even want to move from the situation, because then moving from the situation would force you to speak about it, because we would ask questions, because it is in our nature to pry, especially when something doesn't involve us. It is a mode of escape. I would rather go and ask about your life so that I don't have to focus on my own life. I would rather want to correct you so that I don't have to correct myself. I would rather be talking about you behind your back, because I don't want to talk about myself and put myself at the forefront, because I am just as imperfect. But we don't want to see ourselves as imperfect, so we put other people at the forefront of it. But ladies and gentlemen, emotional abuse is tragic. Emotional abuse is in marriages, it's in relationships, it's at work, it is in situations, it is with family, it is with neighbors. They are just people that are emotionally abusive, and they would pick at anything. You want to ask questions like, why are your children being bullied in school? But these are the telltale signs. These are the telltale signs. This is why we have to ask our questions like, how do you feel? Like, how's the school treating you? Who are your friends? How are your friends treating you? We have to ask our children these questions. And, you know, with, the recent tragedies that have been happening have left me in a state of, panic and fear. Especially considering the fact that this person or these people are not caught yet. So we've had Maasdorp that had
that had been brutally raped and murdered, you know, and then now we have another 6-year-old that had suffered the same fate, but nobody has been arrested for it. And I'm looking at it like, In the mind of a serial killer, I'm looking at it from the perspective of somebody that is sick, somebody that is not in a good state of mind. And I'm looking at this person as a threat, as a national threat, because if this person is not caught, then the adrenaline that comes from it is something that we as a nation cannot handle. And it looks like there is a serial killer and serial rapist on the loose, but I'm not here to scare us. I'm not here to scare you. I'm just saying that maybe, just maybe, law enforcement has to actually put their foot down and work a little bit harder, because some towns are too small for no one to know nothing. It is just unacceptable.
Tired of being stuck in queues or left on hold? Our online sign-up lets you get the connection you need in just a few minutes. Simply head to paratus.africa/Namibia and press the online sign-up button. Then choose from our exciting ranges of fiber, Sky-Fi or mobile LTE products. Fill in the application form and you're already done. Of course, you'll also enjoy free installation on your new package. Sign up online today to enjoy effortless connectivity.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're continuing our conversation around emotional abuse. And now that we have covered so much ground when it comes to emotional abuse, and we've also had tech talks about emotional abuse, we've had a tech talk about a TED talk about a man that had been emotionally abused by his wife, because I can't think and fathom a life where you are telling a man that you are married to that there are men that are more attractive than you, there are men that are handsome, there are men that are, I feel like we have a crude way of motivating others, because if we have a problem with the physique of our spouses, right, it should be a conversation that we are open enough to have, because at the end of the day, we are with each other because of attraction. Whether we like it or not, we have to acknowledge that elephant in the room. And part of the elephant in the room is that we are with one another because we are sexually attracted to one another. We are physically attracted to one another. Now, what happens, especially within long-term relationships or marriages, is that life happens, and when life happens, right, it's either we don't accept that life is happening and we are moving and changing gradually, or we allow life to happen so much that we don't care about what we look. And if we don't care about what we look, we assume that our partners don't care about what we look like either. And that is why many people tend to start emotionally bullying their partners into wanting to change or getting their bodies back or working on their bodies, especially with weight, right? It is such a big conversation within relationships, because you find the ones that just gave birth yesterday and then today they are in the gym and they are working on it, right? And they are capable of working on it. And then you find the one that gave birth 6 months ago and can't get up to go to the gym because it's just not a priority. And this priority in itself is not really, because it's not a priority, but it's just not as important as everything else that still also needs to be done. And also, we are not the same. Our metabolism is not the same. And I wanted us to dive into what happens, right? What happens to the brain when you are affected by trauma? Because even if we want to just understand emotional abuse, right, we have to understand that at the end of the day, that is a traumatic experience. If you have been emotionally abused, that was a traumatic experience for you. So the question is, what happens to your brain when you are faced with a traumatic experience, and what happens to your behavior?
How do you change and how do you just become something else? Because, many of us can say that, no, I've been abused, but I'm just the same. And then you find people that acknowledge this and then they say like, yo, I was half the woman I used to be. I was half the man that I used to be after that relationship. That relationship completely broke me. It annihilated me. It really just, it cut my whole personality in half. And I don't even know who I am. And I don't know what I like. I don't know nothing about myself anymore because it was so bad that I one day had to just bury everything that was me in order for me to feel like I'm going to survive the relationship. I'm going to survive the workplace, or I'm going to survive my family, or I'm going to survive these strangers that I'm cooped up with. And there are so many other places where emotional abuse is also it's also played out in so many ways. There was a place called Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai was a rehabilitation center, but it was not registered at the time, and it was being run by somebody that most of the people that were there had complaints about being emotionally abused. You know, it's a place in Usakos. It deals with substance abuse and narcotics and stuff like that. And there were complaints. It even went until the newspaper where the people were being physically abused and they were being emotionally abused. And it was just bad. Now, if you think about it, if you think about a rehabilitation center, for example, a rehabilitation center that is being accused of emotional abuse and physical abuse by its people, by its tenants or by its clients, right? That is something so bad. And if for families that have sent their loved ones to rehabilitation centers, right, you should know that most rehabilitation centers say that for the first 6 weeks, don't talk to this person. For the first 6 weeks or for the first 7 weeks, don't talk to this person. This person might smuggle a phone and be calling you, come out, girlfriend, what. Don't talk to this person, because eventually within these 6 to 7 weeks, what they do is turn the story around in order for them to get out of the rehabilitation center, because now they're going through withdrawal. Now they're going through what? And they really just want to fix, and they will prey on anything to get you to get them out. So now your son, for example, and there are different tactics, and it's also emotional abuse, right? And there are different tactics that that addicts use to manipulate you into collecting them from a place that you deem to be good for them. So for example, you have a son that has an alcohol problem, and you decide that you're taking him out of the city and you are sending this child to the village, Kohambo. Not even the village, but Kohambo. Because the village, there might still be entertainment and alcohol and of some sort, right? So you send them to a farm where even the farm workers there, they only drink when they go back to their houses, which are like kilometers and kilometers and kilometers away. Then you send your child there. And for the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they are fine. And then after 7 weeks or so, then they call you and they are like, yeah, I want to come home because this place is just not. And what they do is they tell lies about the people that are there. So they start telling you that the guy that you left as a manager of your Ohambo, it has been killing livestock. They hit you where it's sensitive. They manipulate you at the place where you are more likely to react to. So with women, or with mothers, right? The one area that addicts usually use in terms of manipulating you into getting them out of the rehabilitation center or out of the assistance that you had put them in is, I'm not feeling well.
I'm not feeling well and they are hurting me and I feel like I'm going to die here because my life is in danger. Now you as a caretaker, you don't want your child's life to be in danger. You'll go and get your child, but you going to get your child is exactly what damages your child. Like, it's one of those things where you really just have to wait it out for 3 months. And then you can do a thorough investigation yourself. But for the first 3 months, your child, there has not been any reports of anybody that has died there. So, my dear, your child is not going to be the first one. Let them thug it out, because that is part of the manipulation tactics. And it's part of, usually addicts have a tendency of abusing the people that are around them emotionally. And it is a tactic. So, and with fathers, right? So say now you are one of our hero fathers that actually have participated in your children's lives, and you are found in a dilemma. You're found in a situation where your child has just gone rogue. Your child is either doing drugs, or your child is drinking alcohol, and then you have sent them now on a hush-hush, because obviously you don't want most of the whole world to know that your child has a problem. So on a hush-hush, you send your child to a rehabilitation center in South Africa, or you send your child to a rehabilitation center in where, you know, because you're trying for your child. So what happens is, or how your child would manipulate you as a man, is your pocket. Because men care about their money. So your child would call you and say that, yeah, you know what, dad, I don't think this place is working. And you're like, And then your child would say something like, these people are wasting your money, because they are not even teaching us anything, and they are just letting us sleep here, smoke cigarettes the way we want. Nothing is happening. They are not really helping us. Even this program of theirs that they are giving us, the 12 steps, these are things that they just take from the internet. And then you see, when they talk about the quality of what they are supposed to be getting and how they diminish the quality of what they are supposed to be getting, right? You now turn around and react. You react because you feel like your money is being wasted. You feel like your addicted child is telling the truth. But your addicted child has never told the truth any other day. So why would they be telling the truth about this? Not unless they are manipulating you into getting them out of the center. So your child is gone kohambo. And your child is supposed to be recuperating and maybe being rehabilitated in one way or another, right? And, okay, your child decides to call you one day as a man. Child decides to call you one day and say something like, oh, I know, how many cows did you have? Or how many goats did you have? And your dad and you're like, oh no, I think they should be around 200. But you forget easily that 6 months ago, there were 3 goats that actually went missing, or 3 goats that got killed by an animal, or 3 goats that died, right? So you are thinking 500, but it's actually 497. Goats that you have. So what your addicted child would turn around and do is manipulate you, gaslight you, and emotionally abuse you. It's part of it. What your child would do is tell you that, there are no 500 goats here. These people are just eating your money. These people are just, you are helping them, you are paying them, and they are just eating your things. So that is the trigger point for men. The trigger point for men is their pockets and to be seen as stupid. So what your addicted children would do is pry on that. They would rely on that, and then you go kohambo to go and see these indecencies.
of these things that are being done there, because now you are livid because all of a sudden you believe your addicted child. Like, why do you believe your addicted child? Your child is not there because they are the best behaved. Your child is there because your child has a problem. So why do you believe them? You believe them because it's in human nature. It's in human nature for us to give people chances upon chances upon chances upon chances, even when they have been bad, because secretly within ourselves, we don't want that guilt of something happening to them, and we didn't try our level best to do whatever we could to assist them. It's the Christian thing to do. So now you go there, and your child basically stirs up a whole conflict between, and also when he's there, right? He's not on his best behavior because he's craving. He is also irritated. He is easily agitated because he is going through withdrawal of the substance that he abuses. He is going through that, right? And he's not there as a pleasant person to be with. So even your farm workers are tired of him already because he does bad things and he is bad and he wants to fight and he wants to do what? So when you get there, you are angry about goats and this boy is just also, instigating things, and then you end up firing your guy to take care of your hambo, and then, or better yet, right? When you want to fire the guy that takes care of your hambo, your son would say things like, yeah, no, you don't have to fire him. Just give him a warning and what. But me, I can't stay here. You know? So that's how your child gets a ticket to come back without actually ever learning anything, without actually ever starting the point of wanting to change. That's exactly how you get manipulated. And if your child is a girl, and your girl has a problem, substance abuse, addiction of some sort, and you send your child off to Kohambo. You can also send your daughter to Kohambo. If you have a good place like a farm, then your child would manipulate you by bringing up her safety. And it's not her safety in a sense that I just feel unsafe. It is instigating within your mind that one of your employees is a sexual predator. You as a father, automatically your father genes jump in. They jump in and you want to protect your baby girl, but you are forgetting that your baby girl is a monster. Your baby girl is not there because she is an ideal citizen. Your baby girl is there because she has a problem. And the only way that this problem can be eliminated is longevity, is allowing this person to ruin their lives and stay there until a certain point where they have turned their entire lives around, because it's only a them activity. And it's the same thing as you are sending your daughter off to a rehabilitation center there in Senegal or in South Africa or America or wherever you send your children, you know? And they call you and they bring up, because with girls and their dads, they bring up sex issues. They bring up issues of being mistreated and mishandled and manhandled. So they bring up something about, the caretakers here, they don't even lock our rooms. Yesterday I woke up and one of the other patients almost raped me. And you become livid. And you are thinking, yeah, this facility is trash. How can we be paying so much money like this? And our children are not even safe and. But why are you believing your child that is already known to be a liar? It is because your child wants you to come and get them, even at the risk of tarnishing a whole entire establishment that has helped other people, right? It's image. At the expense of that, because what I know about addicts is that when in active addiction, addicts care about no one.
No one at all. They care about no one. Not even you that is going to be their father of the nation. You're going to go and get your baby girl that is almost being raped and almost being molested and almost being violated by these people from this center. Even though you were told at the beginning of the treatment, right, that don't communicate with them. But we have this hankering fear of letting go of our people, our children, into the hands of the world, as if our children are not already in the hands of the world. Our children are already dancing with the devil. The devil that you're sending them to is not a bigger devil than the devil that they're already in bed with. And that's how they get you. So you go and fight and you go and take your daughter back. You know, the facility still continues. You go and take your daughter back. And then 2 weeks, 2 days, your daughter is back on the pipe. Your daughter is back on the streets. Your daughter is back into her natural habitat. Because the idea was, at all costs, I must get out. But if you had just listened to the facility people and ignored every single phone call and every single WhatsApp that you were getting from these, from your people that you're trying to help, then there would have been a fighting chance. And in turn, something that happens with emotionally abused people, right? I speak of emotionally abused people in terms of addiction as well, because you people that are living with addicts in your lives, you guys become crazy. You become crazy because the addict makes you crazy. So your person, your husband that is your wife that is a gambling addict that has basically gambled your whole entire life away already, she gaslights you. Everything that we were talking about, emotional abuse, it happens to you. And it's not just about the sexual part. It's just about gaslighting, manipulation, turning things around to start an argument so that she has a reason to leave the house and you must not follow her because she's just trying to cool off. Because these are all tactics. They're all tactics that are unfortunately so difficult to pinpoint, not unless you have a matriarch, right? And if you're out there and you hear this, you know, like, I pray for you. If you're out there and this is your situation, I pray for you. I pray for you. And I hope that you are hearing what I'm saying. I hope that you are hearing. I know that it is not one of those conversations where you come to the front and you're like, yeah, me, my daughter also, and my son also, and my grandson also. It's not a pleasant thing. But at least get that right. When they tell you don't call, when they tell you that they will give a phone call, they will give a phone call. Don't go and smuggle phones in. Because also, if it defeats the purpose. So now your person goes to a rehabilitation center. And then you are the one that smuggles them the cell phone, apparently so that they can keep in contact with you. Do you know who else's number is on that cell phone? Do you know who else's number is known by heart? The drug dealer. Their number is also known by heart. And the weed dealer and the guy, the plug of the bar, everybody's numbers, all the plugs are also on there. So now your child has access to contraband, right? While being on the inside working on their recovery. It's crazy. I have a younger sister. I have a younger stepsister that is on the verge, or was on the verge, of losing everything because she is a deep, deep, deep alcoholic. And she is such a deep alcoholic, right? And this is a young girl, like young lady. She's at that young lady age. Young lady is 26, 27, you know, 28. Young lady, you know? And this is a young lady that can go for days without bathing. And still go to the office. And she works in a government office. And still go to the office. And not bathing, but it's not like you that doesn't bath. You go home, you watch your TV, you don't bath. Tomorrow you wake up, you wash your face, you go to work. It's not like that. Because you, all you are doing is just laying down, watching your things, and you are eating, and that's it. You're not going outside, you're not doing what. But what about a person that spends the whole night drinking until they pass out? And they didn't bath, so they drink all night, and then they pass out, and then tomorrow morning, they just wash their faces and go to the office. So there are two kinds of smells there. It's the dirty smell, and it's the alcohol smell. So say khas and say stunk. And she's in the office. It became such a bad situation where when we talk about addictions, I feel like many people don't actually think that alcohol is a bad addiction. They don't think that it is as bad as everything else. But let me tell you, ne, that it is. It's bad. Alcohol has a tendency of going out of the way. And the worst part is that you can't even really catch it because it's so accessible everywhere. At least with drugs, you have to go to a certain location to go and get a certain what because of what and what because it's illegal, you know. But now, all you have to do is just make sure you have all your booze before 6 o'clock and you can just live in your addiction. So it got to a point where as soon as the money comes on, payday, the money comes on, she's at the ATM waiting for this money to come on so that she can withdraw and go and drink herself silly. Drink. And it's drinking so much that by the time that it is time to pay for things, buy food, send money to the child, there's nothing done because there's no money left at all. And she's not going out to drink with friends because real alcoholics don't drink with friends. Real addicts start doing things alone because having friends around means that I have to share. That means I don't get as drunk as I'm supposed to get. I don't get as high as I'm supposed to get. I don't get to play my jackpot as hard as I'm supposed to because now I have to share the money that we are playing jackpot with, you know. So got to a point where rent is not paid, and after rent is not paid, food is not bought, nothing is done. And then eventually the landlord kicks you out because, I mean, you can't stay here for 6 months without paying rent. And then we are also repossessing your stuff because your stuff must be the equivalent of rent so that we can sell your things. And then maybe if we can sell your things, then we can get back our money. Right? And now she's left with a bag. So she puts her bag in the office and then she just drags clothes out of there. And that was her life. And then she started sleeping in the office. So 5 o'clock when people chila. So 1 o'clock already, she does the whole go to the shop, go get the alcohol already, put it inside the bag, and at 1 o'clock. And she, like, we as addicts think that we are smart, so we assume that even if I just have this one beer, nobody's gonna smell it, I'm just gonna eat bubblegum, but it doesn't work like that. So she would start already at 1 o'clock, and by 4:30 she's already out, like, because what I'm whisk. Like those sachets of whiskey that come from Angola, the ones that are $5. So she's drinking those, you know. And by 4 o'clock, she's out like a light. And she locks herself in the office and then she sleeps under the desk. And that is where she lived. She lived in her office for months. And this was a government office. So for months, right, she just walking the floors and going to the toilet there, freshen up, what, she has her alcohol. So she's just there. You know, she smokes her cigarettes, she smokes her ganja, she drinks her alcohol, she sleeps. Tomorrow morning, she puts on an alarm, and then at 5:30, she's awake, she goes and freshens up and look presentable, but you are not really bathing most because you are, it's a basin. So everybody started complaining about the smells. Everybody started complaining. And eventually one day, she was caught sleeping. I think she overslept. And then she was caught sleeping and her supervisor or her boss has a key to her office and then opened and then noticed that this person just lives here. And we never ever think that these stories are real. We don't ever think that it gets to this point. But it does. It does. And we never think that it happens to girls. We never think that it happens to boys. We just don't think about addiction as much as we should think about addiction. But this country, ladies and gentlemen, is in ruins. It is in ruins. We say that 50% of our population, rough estimate, right? 50% of our population is unemployed, or 50% of the youth is unemployed. And we are having graduation ceremonies left, right, and center. And our people, our children are graduating. Get it? But if you look at the statistics, if you look at the numbers, right? I can guarantee that 70% of the unemployment rate of 70% of this 50% of people that are unemployed or youths that are unemployed in this country are actually incapable of holding office. They're actually incapable of work. Even if they were awarded the jobs that they are seeking for, I can tell you that only 30% would deliver. Only 30% of them would actually go to work. Because 70% of them are struggling from addiction. They're struggling from drug addiction. They're struggling from alcohol addiction. They're struggling from gambling addiction. These three addictions, drugs and alcohol being at the top, right, is what is really honestly killing our nation. Ladies and gentlemen, we can dive into it. We can go wild on it. But in all honesty, if I had to ask you a question, right? And I'm not insulting anybody, but if you feel insulted, maybe the shoe fits for you. So if this is your insult, take it like a girl, take it like a boy, okay? Take it. So, we've got our struggle kids, got our people that are in the ruins and they're struggling and all of that. We've got our people sleeping in tents and they are now awarded jobs. So we come and we have heard your cries, right? We've heard your cries and we're going to give you jobs. We're going to give you jobs in the same government that you say that your parents fought for and the parents died for. We're going to give you jobs. So where the struggle kids stay is they stay in a not so good environment because they are fighting for a justice, or they are fighting for something. They've got a cause that they're fighting for. And part of that cause, also allows them to inhabit the piece of property that they're inhabiting. So you can't go and build a house there because you don't have money to build a house there and it's also not yours. So they live in tents and makeshift places. So now my question is, okay, so you as an entity come and you are like, okay guys, so we've heard your cries. We've heard your cries. We've heard your pleads. Please. And we're going to give you guys jobs. So we've got 10 cleaner jobs in the government. Now for you, that is sane-minded. And for me, that's sane-minded, right? If I'm living in a tent, if I'm living in poverty, and there's now this opportunity to go and work, no matter what kind of work it is, to go and work, to earn something, right? You and I are thinking that, no, me, I'll take it. You know why me and you are thinking like that? Because me and you are not high on anything. I'm not implying that most of them. I'm not implying that anyone is doing narcotics. I'm implying that Namibia is on drugs. Namibia is on alcohol. Namibians are addicts, right? Because I can't understand the logic behind declining a job because it's not a manager job, because it's a cleaner job. I can't understand the logic behind it, because for me as a person, that is logical. I'd like to believe that I would rather have that job than no job. I'd rather have this job and try somewhere somehow to make it work and fix my life than be living in shambles and ruin. Not unless, right? My mind is not focused. My mind is altered by a substance of some sort. Because I believe that it's only substance that can make you think that you declining a job is better. Then there are also situations, right, where we as people are trying to help others. So we know that, oh my goodness, we've got a 50% of unemployment rate amongst the youth, right? Because when we think of this, we think of everybody being graduates, but it's not. Even the grade 4 dropout is also a youth. He's in our group also. So he's also not a graduate. He's not a graduate, you know. We assume everybody's a graduate, and that's why we are so alarmed by it. But no, it's just some. It's just 30%. Or it's just 15% that is a graduate now. And then the other 15% are just ordinary people that are capable. And then the other 70% are the people that are very, very much incapable, but are part of the swing. So now you find that you want to be a good citizen, and you found a way, and you heard that who is suffering and what. And you didn't hear the backstory about anything. You just see a young lady or a young man that's suffering, who has kids, what. Then you get them employed. Ne? So you, your boss trusts you. Your boss trusts your better judgment. And you've worked for your boss for years. And then your boss says, okay, Elizabeth, you say that there's this girl that has a really good voice and is very intelligent and can spearhead a show. And this is the type of show that she's presenting, right? Yeah. So that the Walenga now gives you the opportunity, which, okay, bring your person. Let's see. Because, okay, let's give opportunities, you know, let's take people off the street. Let's see how they do. And then the person starts working. Right? The person starts working for the first month. We are all happy. I'm happy. And my boss is happy. Everybody's happy. And then payday comes. And then the person disappears. So payday is on Friday. And then the person disappears until Monday. From Friday morning, they didn't come to work. And they have shows from Friday, Saturday, Sunday as well. They have shows and they don't come. They don't pitch. They pitch to work on Monday. They have a story about them not feeling well, what. And then in the middle there, they don't come to work anymore. Or when they come to work, they are drunk. And is this now a person that you want to be in the same vicinity with? Is this the person that you recommended? So now your boss is going to look at you and say that, but Elizabeth, this is the person that you said I should give a chance, and now this person is destroying my company. What is this? You know? That is why I go back to the fact that even these jobs that are supposed to be created, right? Who is going to occupy these jobs? And are they capable of occupying these jobs? Even if the jobs were plentiful, are they capable? Are they actually capable of holding down a job? Because you find some people are so lucky in work. so lucky in work that they can resign from one job today, and then tomorrow they get yafara eniti. Tomorrow they can go to Angry Lion and they get the job instantly, or they can drop this work and get another call here. They have had 10 jobs. There are people that are just fortunate like that. You know, while you are struggling, one, there are people that have in this year alone, these 4 months, they have jumped from 5 jobs already, and they are not fired, they resign, right? You find those lucky people. Now, the question is, are we actually capable of being workers? Or is it just nice to throw it in there, to emotionally abuse the nation, to blackmail and gaslight the nation into believing that we have a real workforce? Because all I see is addicts that have no idea what they're doing. Addicts that have the ability to drag everybody down with them. People that don't go to work. Part of their aim and part of their role and part of what they want, especially with all of these government jobs, right? Part of what they want is to get into the system, because they know that getting out of the system within a government office is very difficult. It's not like private sector, where if matriarch messes up, Tate Walenga is going to say, thank you so much, Shed, for everything. I think that this is the end of our road. Mara, like, thank you so much for your service. And it's like that. There's no, okay, so I'm just going to finish my 2 days or my 1 hour. It's chalatate. If you're fired, you're fired. You know, private sector is like that. And they do, like, there are, like, some regulations. But when you're fired, you're fired in public, in private sector. Now, in public sector, apparently you guys have to go through a disciplinary and a board and a what and a what and a what. You never really get fired, and because nobody actually wants to go through that. And that's part of the reason that they all want to work for government. Because we are not actually capable of working. We're not capable of working because we have a dirty nation. And people don't want to talk about this dirty nation. People don't want to talk about the emotional abuse that we are facing as a nation. We are pulling and trying our level best to get to the top. And the only people that are pulling us down are the same people that we are trying to pull our weight for. I'm just saying. Good evening, caller.
Good evening.
I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
I can't hear you properly.
How is your name?
I'm fine, Abdul. How have you been?
Oh, yeah.
Why are you laughing?
You recognize the voice, too.
Yes.
I'm like wondering if you have hiccup or... I don't think that you can recognize me again.
No. I know my people. Just because you're playing with others, because I hear you calling others. I hear, just because you're playing with others doesn't mean you don't love me. Home is where the heart is.
Yeah.
You will come back.
I called you to congratulate you because long time I never believe. I always listen to your show every night.
Mm-hmm.
But then, because of that, sometimes you have callers that are calling me for 1 hour.
Mm.
So, and then we are struggling to, like, check it on your program. Yeah, that's why sometimes you're just listening to your evening show.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday and Thursday, Friday. Yeah, but Friday mostly is quiet because it's not too much people calling. That's why it's easy to call it. So, let me make this opportunity today. So I can get my justice for the end.
Mm-hmm. Are you in the hospital or what?
No. I'm at home.
Oh, okay. Then what's that thing that's in the background? Sounds like a BP machine.
Uh-huh. Actually, I'm watching the movie, and then behind me is a bar.
Mm.
But a big bar, but it's only got the echo. I mean, I'm about
what do you have to say?
On your topic, it's very, very important topic that you're presenting today. My case is actually a question and then the answer that I want to
say. I can't hear you.
Question and the answer from your discussion that you are presenting, actually.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about emotional abuse.
Okay, wait, my battery is low and my YouTube is low. Let me just talk directly on the phone.
Okay. Are you sure you're not in the hospital, Abdul?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you a little bit.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Yeah. Sorry for that. So what I wanted to discuss is a question. The abusers, when it comes to abuse, those people, like, for example, are drinking, taking drugs, and gambling, and abusing their wife or children, or even like we have lots of this thing of gender-based violence, and then we have what you call it crime in partners. So these people, how do you intend to approach them and maybe perhaps give them some piece of advice? But because now you find themselves, they are so abusive, and then it's you are a person, maybe perhaps you don't drink, and you don't be in that part of them, but you see the way they are calling each other to go and drinking, and maybe committing this type of thing. You understand? So want to solve some of these issues, you have ideas on how to solve this issue. But because we are living in a society where, like you say, people abuse even without being notified that you have been abused. So this is why I want you, first of all, how can we, because we are living in a society now, it's about time bomb. It can be, the unfortunate can be abused, when I put it that way. Whereby those who already been affected in drugs a bit, like you see, they go to prison, and then they want to go and give them some, a little bit of, reduce their pressure, and cancel them. But then, still, those who are outside here, they are caught the other side more damage, because those who are calling them to go and do drugs, alcohol, and committing certain acts, have been now more than us. You understand? So this is where I want to know, how can we as a collectively, whether by your family, whether by your friend, a friend then another friend, like you said, at a working place, at a bar place, at a place where there's a gambling houses, at a place where there's a lot of crime are taking place, even at the police station. These are the shell. What do you call the cell, ne? It's a cell, ne?
Yes.
Yeah. And also we have at the prison, how do you tell your friend to reduce certain abuse that is going through emotional attack? How can we, as a society, if end of the day we don't have the power to stop that, and then what will happen in the other side when they have more power to use the drugs and commit more crime, and end of the day, the ones that they are not even part of it are the ones that are being
affected.
affected, you understand? So this is a platform what you put in. It is a putting it as a broad question and a broad for everybody. Like you put it for myself and for those who are also under pressure, family problem, even your wife.
Yeah.
Maybe your wife does not like what you are doing. But they don't have the power to stop you. You have no capability to do those harmful with your friends, with your groups, or your agencies, your messengers, and end of the day, you came with those things to the house or to your working place and everywhere you are. So, end of the day, how can we, as a, whether by, as you say, if I put it in government now, in government, is the government awakened? That's a question I want to put in to them. Is the government awakened? Because what I mean awakened in the sense that if you can, as a government, if you have a reforced power, why are you not reinforcing some of these things that have been affected in the society? And you see your people are going through trauma. But you do not have that capability to reinforce the matter, to stop immediately. So how? Why did the other side must be overpowered you? We say we are state members. We are state representatives. And then goes down to what they call it, crime impartiners. Crime impartiners is those people that are committing crime when they together in force. So how did you as a partner, if you know the other person is committing this crime A, crime B, crime C, you do not advise that person to say stop, post it, and then you give him advice. Okay, no, you see, there's a place where they're selling drugs there. Or maybe there's a place where they sell alcohol there. You already lead that person to go and buy that thing. And when he takes it, and then who directs him? It's a crime partner. The inform him to say, there is a so area that they're selling. And then the other one, again, is that the one who gives money, supporting in crime partner. When you give somebody's money and the person asks you for a favor, and then you give this person, but you don't know his intention. Why did he is going to do that money? And then at the end of the day, we haven't affected through by sharing.
Enabling. It's called enabling. When we when we give addicts money, it's enabling.
So that neighboring name, that is now where the problem is. And then the one that is now in the danger is that the one that is not even never been smoked.
Yeah, never doing anything.
But is in now the one that is going to be abused.
Yeah.
So now that's the question. That's what I'm saying. We are in a situation where it's a time bomb. That everybody needs to speak up. The one that is affected, the one that is not affected, and the one that has been seen that this crime is going in the other way, out of the other, what do you call it? Out of hand or out of the page that we are in. We look at the crime, but we don't want to stop it, but we have power. And then we have the information. We have all the way that we can see that this thing must be come to an end. That's because we are scared. And we are fear. You see? And then we are not honest to ourselves. Honest to each other. We are dishonest to our own family. We are dishonest to our own groups. We are dishonest to our own state. As collectively, even to the extent to the state.
Yeah.
Because if you are police, crime.
Yes.
In dealing alcohol, in dealing drugs, in dealing gambling places, and other things that are prohibited by law. But you're also part of it.
Yeah.
How are you going to tell this person stop the crime when you're also a member of it?
Yeah.
You see where I'm going now?
Yeah, no, I hear you, and I hear you, and you are making a very valid point, because I believe that part of the reason that it has not been tackled, right, is because I don't think that the lawmakers and the people that are at the top actually know how serious it is.
Yes.
I feel like they don't know how serious and how bad addiction is. I don't think that they think for a minute that our youth is actually only out of that 50%, right?
Yes.
Only 30% is really a functioning youth.
Yes.
The 70%, they can't. The 70%, they can't do anything. Because they are crippled. But I think because we like to only show pictures of the successful. Like this week, we are showing pictures of the graduates. We are showing pictures of hope and promise. I think that is where we go wrong. We go wrong by making it seem like the graduates are the only ones that are unemployed and they are the youth. To be honest, I think that people must start taking pictures in Evelyn Street. People must start taking pictures in Evelyn Street and see how many people are standing with beers. People must start taking pictures in Damara location to see how many people are standing with beers. And yes, single quarters, how many of them are standing with crack pipes? People must start looking at all these crack houses and looking at the parks and looking at who is actually in the parks. Because you know one thing that I hate about Windhoek City is the fact that there are parks everywhere. Do you know why I hate the parks? Because there are no children in the parks, Abdul. Have you gone to Vanaheda Park and seen children playing?
No, I only saw.
You only see big people. What are they doing in the park? If it's not drugs and alcohol, yes, even in the night. You go to Pioneers Park Park right now, you will not see a child. Do you know that my children are prohibited from going to the park?
You see why?
Because there's drugs and alcohol in the park.
Yes.
Now, I'm even thinking that to write a petition to City of Windhoek to just close down all these parks, because these parks are the hubs of alcohol and drugs.
Yes, and the question is, what was the purpose of we putting the park? Is for the kids to
play. It's for the kids to play, but now the kids are trapped in houses. Now our children are growing up to think that we only stay in the house, but there's a whole park with swings and all these things, right? That are just being accommodated by boomerlars and crack addicts and alcoholics. Because that's where they hang out.
Society.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's the thing. And so these are the type of things that when you say, even like you say, those are the type of emotional that we are going through.
Yeah, the emotional abuse that we are going through because of the trauma that has been imposed on us.
Yes, because we are now being
now we are abusing our kids. Because we have been traumatized.
Yeah, traumatized. It's like a force. Either you accept us,
yes,
or we do what we can do about you. And
yes,
this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then who get the money?
Mm.
The people that they are working with, they are the ones getting the money, mm-hmm, but the one who paying the price is who? Accident is there, and then you find baby dumping, you find murderers.
The evidence of what is happening, the evidence of the aftermath after the money is given, right, is there in everything. Abdul, you are right. It's there in everything, because it's not sober people that are going to stab each other at the bar, because what is a sober person doing at the bar? It's two drunk people.
Yes. people, and then the one who is doing the thing is and then the thing is, the funny thing is that they're not stamping the one who's selling them.
Mm-hmm.
You never see, do you ever have a person that's selling the drugs or a person that sells alcohol is being killed by the drunker?
Yes.
No. That doesn't happen. But who is going to suffer when after going out, whether by the house or by the car, bumping another person, boom, gone.
And then the alcoholic goes home to go and beat his wife and kids. For nothing.
Molest somebody, old person, bum is gone. Tomorrow the police, they say, no, a 95 years old was killed by what?
Yeah.
What? Only when the sin is gone.
There was recently, Abdul. The worst part about drug addiction and alcohol addiction in this country is that none of us are really associating it to all of the crimes, right? But I think it was a week ago. It was in if it's not in Engela, it's somewhere around these villages in Okwanyama. There was a senior man, that was cut up with a machete by his nephew, his grandson nephew's person, right? He cut this man. There was no place on his body that he was not cut. And that child is on drugs.
Shame.
And the drugs are in villages now. You don't understand why people are stealing in the village. You don't understand why people are robbing in the village. You don't understand. Because the drugs have moved.
Yeah, it has transformed the city to the village, from the town to the home.
Now it's everywhere. Their business has expanded, Moss. It's everywhere. It's in the towns and it's in the villages.
Yeah.
And we don't see how serious it is because it's not our children. And even when our children become drug addicts and alcoholics, we take them to the best rehabs and we just fight with their addiction, with money. But the people that don't have money to be fighting with rehabilitation centers, they are stuck with their people in the house terrorizing them. Because Abdul, I cannot understand why someone can wake up and decide to kill 6 members of their family, cut them up into pieces.
And then them.
Not even themselves. He's arrested. That one is drugs.
And then the funny thing is that, then you call the person a manual. Why did you call a manual? When was committing the crime? When he was planning all this thing of killing with the panga and all these things, and to extend, which man was he using? A manual mind, or was it
adult mind?
Adult mind.
Yeah.
And, no, because this thing, and then 21 years, you put him in the prison, and then after you release him, no, he came back outside. What will you do? He could commit again the same crime.
It's just just like the Masdorp killing of this guy that decided to go. He killed his girlfriend because he's on drugs, right? He kills his girlfriend, and then he leaves her there, then he steals her TV, her ATM, her card, then he drives all the way to Mariental. From Mariental, he comes back, and then he drives all the way to Wewe. Like, what is that?
That is bad. If the rain is coming in your door head, just one day, when that rain is gonna come, how is it going to come in your door? How are you going to cry? How are you going to shout? And how are you going to feel that emotional when you lose somebody?
Yeah.
Imagine, is it last of last week, it's a 5-year-old child.
Yes.
Killed and murdered.
There's also another one's body that was found today, Abdul. Same school. Yes, same school, 6 years old.
In the same school?
Yes.
The society.
And up until today, nobody knows anything. How?
How? That is the question, how? And who? Because that's what I'm saying, people are hiding information. And this is an abuse of information. It's an abuse of somebody's right that has been taken away. And then because you are scared of prosecuting this person because he feels that maybe Kuta, I will be also the next person to be killed or to be tortured or to be do whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you, because of this trauma, this is how this trauma is going one by house, house by house. But by the time he's going in their door, like you say, they were going to take the big lawyers and what, and then to save that person. But now, you don't save the poor man.
Yeah.
You don't save the person who is disabled. You don't save the person who is hardworking in the selling of the cabana, whatever, selling this on. And then their children have been molested by.
Yeah.
And then quiet. And then things are going wrong. And then no one is taking action.
Yeah.
That's what will happen. So, meaning every house will start crying.
My dear, every house is already crying, Abdul. Every house is already crying. I think that maybe we as a country must come together and protest against drug and alcohol abuse and gambling. Maybe we must protest and say that we need centers for our people. Real centers. Where we can really, really help our people. And also, we need to arrest. I don't understand how the police knows, ne? Where the drug houses are. But they are not closing them. Why are they not closing them?
I understand the president, the new president, Meminetungo. He said, all the shelters, what, he gives time to do. But this needs to be reinforced. Because people that we are seeking, like you're asking when they call me, which noise was making there? Except that, behind me. That is making from
7 in the morning until 7 in the morning.
Malan, I think 4 o'clock or quarter to 4 in the morning time.
Until you even just become used to it.
You see? You understand?
It's so true.
One in town there at what you call the Klein window or whatever, the same thing is happening.
So exactly.
The law needs to be reinforced.
You
know, this law, everything must be closed by 5 o'clock.
Yeah. Like in Botswana, everything must be closed at 10.
Yes, you see?
Before
10 o'clock, all offices close 5 o'clock. Then all shops must close before ten o'clock, as you say.
Yeah.
Before that, and then everybody have peace to go sleep.
Yeah.
So who has money? If he has no money to live, then that is what I'm saying. That means also you can save your life, you save your economic, you save your life.
Yes.
Because
you save the health of your people.
Huh? You understand?
Mm.
And you save the country, because if the country is going to become a chaos city, a country without respect and dignity for other people, what kind of society we are? We can say we are peaceful. Yes, we have peace.
Mm.
But the other peace is not there.
Yeah.
People are behaving. People are attack each other. Murderers are there killing each other. And every day, like you said today, what does the child have to do to go in the grave earlier in the grave?
Yeah.
And you never die. But you are taking the child who's supposed to live his life like you.
Yeah.
It's not his teacher. He never has his life, but you are taking it shorter. So what was the purpose of that child to be? So this is a different type of things, man, Buddha. Leaders, man, they are listening. They need, this is now a very responsibility idea we are giving them. They need to take the ball with their own hand. They need to think one day, it's my son, it's my daughter, whether I'm a minister, whether I'm a president, whether I'm a who. You know, one day, it will be one day your child.
Yeah.
What do if you are the president, your child is being abused in that manner? Your child is in that manner. Were you going to stand for the law, or were you going to affect yourself in that? This is the question. So everybody must ask the question, what role must I play? So that this type of thing, this type of, because it's like the eye of the evil, in the Bible, in the religious side, they say that the devil is being opened now. And then the heart of the devil is being spread across the world or across the country. Then the hands of has touched where it's supposed to be touched. Because when you touch with the alcohol, meaning that what you are touching is evil. When you see somebody is taking drugs and you say, let's go past, let's go be past, know that this thing is evil because your eye or your hand, your soul, supposed to be part of it. But the soul of the country is very huge than all of us. If the country is not, if the country is not in peace, is tortured, then all of us were tortured.
Thank you so much, Abdul, for your contribution.
Okay, my dear sister.
So see you tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Oh, 1 o'clock.
Inshallah.
Then. Inshallah. Oh, why is my friend?
Who? Best friend?
Best friend and who is the other one? Chicken.
Chicken is around, I think. I saw him in January, I think.
Oh.
Mm.
It's long time I never heard about him and never able to hear, come to be safe and to greet his family's day.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Blessed night, my dear sister.
Blessed night. Ciao, ciao.
Okay. So Allah bless you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Salam.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, ELFM. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking addictions. We're talking emotional abuse. We're talking about everything that has to do with emotional abuse. And unfortunately, these are part of the things that comes with emotional abuse. But before that, ladies and gentlemen, let's have a quick TED talk about trauma, shame, and being enough.
A few years ago, I was having lunch with some colleagues, and I mentioned the research I'd been doing on shame. I said, it all seems to come down to one thing, being enough. One of the therapists said, you're enough? I didn't know you were from Nuff. That inspired this cute little character. I keep on my desk, I give out to my clients, a reminder that we are all enough. I'm enough, you're enough, they're enough. If that's true, what keeps us from believing it? I wish I could give you a bullet point answer to that question, but I can't. What I can do is walk you through some things I've discovered in my 40 plus years of being a mother, an educator, a therapist, and an author. In the 1990s, I was a mom of four small children and a parent educator for a large pediatric practice in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I was well-equipped with the best parenting information I had learned in my early childhood graduate program. However, behind closed doors, I often heard people, myself included, saying things such as, I can't get it right. What's wrong with me? Everybody else seems to have it all together. The more parenting books people read, the worse they felt. I decided to pursue a PhD in psychology so I could fix this not-enoughness once and for all. My thesis question was, what's the lived experience of mothers who feel good enough? Attachment theorist Donald Winnicott had coined the term good enough mother in 1953 to relinquish mommy guilt. My research revealed Winnicott didn't help. Good enough just became another unobtainable standard. Non-enoughness can't be calculated, reasoned with, or fixed. It lives in the shadow of perfectionism, or what researcher Brené Brown calls shame. That painful feeling of being tragically flawed and unworthy of love and belonging. Psychologist Carl Jung defined the shadow as the parts of ourselves we hide because we fear that they are bad. When we don't recognize our shadow, we tend to act in ways we don't consciously understand. What then is lurking in this shadow of chronic non-enoughness? Let's start with 2 years ago, a time we all remember all too well, but I know we'd really like to forget. So 1 month after the COVID-19 pandemic hit, there was an 891% increase in calls to the National Mental Health Hotline. The pause on our busy routines was a wake-up call for our mental health. No longer any place to run and hide from our shadow. We had to go in, not out. Raven, a 20-year-old college student, contacted me with anxiety and depression and shared this journal entry. I'm worried about debt, college success, dad's health, mom's emotions, if I will ever be loved, or if I am loved. 52-year-old Ella reached out for her first-time therapy appointment 17 years after suffering a debilitating stroke. She told me it seems as if all my life I've put my emotions in boxes on a shelf. And the shelf has gotten too heavy, and now the boxes have fallen on the floor, and I can't ignore them anymore. It's as if we've created a culture that thrives on not being good enough. Media images portray unrealistic expectations. Success is measured by graduating from the best colleges, hefty bank accounts. Children are encouraged to compete, regardless of how much anxiety ensues. Employers demand perfection over well-being. Implicit bias dismisses and disregards race, gender, and diversity. And even our mental health system feeds non-enoughness with stigma, diagnoses, and how-to solutions that often lead to more failure. What the hell has happened to us? Well, let's go back, way back, to infancy and childhood. In the first 3 years of life, your nonverbal feeling right brain develops before your verbal analytical left brain. You aren't born asking for a Starbucks. Instead, you cry out for the feeling of being comforted, loved, seen, nurtured. Caregivers who attune to our early needs help us develop neural connections that support the feelings of love and belonging. Misattunements, however, prune off these neural connections, much like trimming branches off a tree, leaving us with a broken compass for feeling good enough from the start. Now let's go back even further, back to our ancestors. Swiss psychoanalyst Alice Miller studied 18th century child rearing practices. She called them poisonous pedagogies, because they encouraged parents to withhold love and affection, to name call, ridicule, humiliate, and literally beat the devil out of a 2-year-old having a temper tantrum. The ultimate parenting goal was to break the will of the child before old enough to remember. Now let's pivot into the lens of neuroscience and trauma. Tests that measure electrical activity in your brain show that prior to age 7, your brain operates in mainly lower level theta brainwaves. So everything in the first 6 years of life is absorbed into your subconscious mind, much like a hypnotic trance. So you grow up under a spell of sorts. A shame-inducing spell, perhaps? Physician Gabor Mate defined trauma as an emotional wound that induces fear and interferes with the ability to grow and develop. We've all experienced trauma in varying degrees, including secondary trauma, just watching TV, news, and social media. Regardless of the degree, trauma impairs the brain and nervous system's ability to feel safe. Seeking emotional safety, children begin to start to develop adaptive responses that continue on into adulthood. People-pleasing, rage, avoidance, disordered eating, perfectionism, over-controlling, and even addiction, just to name a few. When we don't look our shame shadow straight in the eye and take it down, we end up taking ourselves and others down with us. COVID made us look. The past 2 years of uncertainty and fear have activated so much trauma. Nervous systems are raw. My clients are saying, I'm shattered. I'm a mess. I'm undone. I'm falling apart. What I say to them is, sometimes things have to come apart in order to come together in a different way. As the poet Rumi says, you have to keep breaking your heart until it opens. I may have painted a bleak picture here, but the good news is you can rewire neural connections and change your DNA. But you can't do it from the neck up. I started tonight with this slide not to make fun of the fact that many of us don't feel good enough. Rather, to give you and myself one split second of feeling good without analyzing or judging whether or not you believe it. How many of you sighed or exhaled when you saw this? How many of you chuckled or laughed? That one split second may have contributed to positive changes in your brain, known as neuroplasticity. So now let's move down into your heart. Your heart is the regulatory organ that detects and responds to safety threats, not your brain. You have 40,000 sensory neurites in your heart valves, also known as the heart brain. When trauma stresses the nervous system, it disconnects the head from the heart. That's why you can't find safety in your logical mind. Let me repeat that. You can't find safety in your logical mind. Experiences that feel good are what you need to generate coherent heart rhythms and rewire emotional safety. And I'm not talking about the bottle of wine, the Ben and Jerry's, or the booty call. Setting your compass to present moment regulates the heart. Worries about the future and regrets about the past take you out of present moment and reactivate trauma. Jon Kabat-Zinn, pioneer of relaxation meditation, defines mindfulness as moment-to-moment, non-judgmental awareness. The poet Mary Oliver wrote, "If we pause for a moment, even for something as inconsequential as a few birds singing, we might find unexpected joy." It doesn't help to go back and blame or criticize anyone about what happened to you. Instead, acknowledge your ability to change your neural connections now and make a commitment to be better to yourself. Remember my client, Ella? Let me tell you what was in her boxes. One box held the trauma she had not being able to communicate with caregivers after her stroke. Another held her guilt she has because her husband blames her for his arthritis, having to lift and transport her. Another has her mother-in-law's criticism. And another had her feelings of failure as a mother because she couldn't do the things that other mothers could do. And in another box was Rufus, a children's book she started before her stroke and never got back to until February of this year. Knowing that creativity helps build neuroplasticity, I encouraged Ella to start writing. It took her many months, but she's now begun to let Rufus speak. Ella found freedom in emptying her boxes and releasing her pain. Rufus is helping her to continue to express herself, and maybe one day her children's book will help others do the same. Demystifying chronic not-enoughness requires telling the truth. If you look closely at the word familiar, you might see two words: family and liar. Much of what we learn growing up is a lie. Now let me shamelessly share a few of mine. I was a mistake. I was Fatty Patty. In sixth grade, I was told to be happy when my father died because he was in heaven. My high school guidance counselor told me I wasn't smart enough to be a psychologist. My ex-husband would tell me not to sing to our children because I might make them tone deaf. Luckily, gratefully, through the years, many years of brutal inner space work, I've discovered, or I am discovering, the truer things. I am a blessing. I have beautiful curves.
Are you hearing this, ladies and gentlemen? Yes?
It's essential to wail when losing a loved one, especially my father. I got that PhD in psychology. And I just sang in my first solo vocal freedom performance with Rebecca Folsom on January 14th. Demystifying chronic non-enoughness also requires the willingness and tenacity to stay on the ride, even if you don't know where it's going or how long it's going to take. Metaphysician Deepak Chopra said that some people think that the shadow is the opposite of love, and actually, it is the way to love. The average number of uncomfortable feelings my clients can identify is 3. Frustrated, mad, and sad. Growing up, we often learn feeling words from adults who simultaneously shame us for them. Don't be angry. You're okay. Stop crying before I give you something to cry about. Get over it. It's only an ice cream cone. So we begin to believe that our feelings are bad, so we shut them down, fearing we are bad. So where do you think they go? The shadow. I offer my clients a 50-word feeling list to help them identify the shadow. They begin to excavate deeper emotions such as abandoned, unloved, betrayed, invisible. These deeper feelings help them identify that original shame story so they can write a new narrative. For example, if you feel abandoned, ask how you can stick around for yourself a little more. And finally, a very significant way to break the spell of shame is by using the magic of imagination. Awe, wonder, and curiosity tame shame. Give yourself permission to play and be like a child. Sing, dance, laugh, create. Use your senses to identify things that feel, taste, smell, look, sound good, like your favorite song. Petting your cat, sun shining, flowers blooming, lavender, hot tea. Imagine gratitude, even amid devastation. And of course, imagine what it might feel like if you were enough.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, we're diving into your emotion, and we're diving into your emotion with a school of thought that can just linger, and it can just exist within our reality. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that this journey that we are on, you and I, because I'm forcing you to be on the journey with me. I think that the journey that we are on, where we are dealing with the shadow, we're dealing with the self, we're dealing with the shadow because we associate the shadow to shame. We associate the shadow to bad. We associate the shadow to everything that is in the negative. But the truth is that it is just something that is bottled down. So ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about emotional abuse, and the reason that we have decided to play that TED Talk particularly was because If you look at our journey in the beginning, if you look at our journey in the middle, if you look at the things that people have said along the way, you realize that maybe, just maybe, I was subjected to emotional abuse. Because I don't think that we would be this messed up if we weren't. I think that it was a starting point. And from there, it escalated into everything else that's happening now. And unfortunately, we are on this roller coaster. But I would dare to be different, and I would dare for us to just stop the ride a little bit and just acknowledge where we are. it is not necessarily about admitting and doing something about it. For me, it's just knowing. Just knowing in itself gives you a sense of accountability when you talk, a sense of reasoning when you think, a sense of understanding why you say the things you say and how you say the things you say. For me, understanding is a weapon of destruction. It can destroy your enemies. It can destroy the things that push you back and hold you back. It can destroy by simply knowing that you have a problem. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about emotional abuse, not because it is this fun and exciting topic that just lingers there and we love it. No. It's because we need it. We need to talk about it just so that somewhere, somehow, someday, right, we'll have a fighting chance. We're talking about it simply because we need to talk about it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be closing off our conversation tomorrow from 1 o'clock until 4 p.m. We're going to be closing off our conversation around emotional abuse. And I hope you guys do call in. And I know that I missed a couple of calls that came in when we were listening to our TED Talk. But tomorrow is still a day. So, ladies and gentlemen, we keep trying to reconstruct, but it's not everything that needs reconstruction. Sometimes, right? We need to understand where we are. Black Widow.
This version of me is so temporary, contemporary, living in this modern dream. Nothing is what it seems. This version of me is so temporary, contemporary, living in this modern dream. Nothing We keep changing our colors, hoping for growth, camouflage through this life while we're ducking them errors. Keep a straight face on, never show that you're faded, keep your heart on God. This world kinda twists, lose yourself in a moment. Woo! Cause your soul kinda needs it. We all healing from something. We all pick our poison. Woo! Through compassion we long for things we would die for. Give an arm and a leg for them, fell via default. Looking for perfection in a race that is flawed, in a system that is rigged. Bound to defeat even a perfect human being. Woo! So we live and we learn, embracing our flaws. While we opening doors. This version of me is so temporary, contemporary, living in this modern dream. Nothing is what it seems. This version of me is so temporary, contemporary, living in this modern dream. Nothing is. So I've been chasing caskets, dealing with addiction, feeling inadequate, dealing with abandonment. Don't forget depression, telling me to end it, end it, end it, end it. Never thought I could again. This year has been hard. Take a look at my heart. You see all my scars. You see all my scars. You see all my scars.
But I know I'm going to make it through the trials and tribulations.
In my head above the water in this current, I'll be swimming, and I swear I'm never sinking. And I swear I'm never sinking. But I know I'm going to make it through the trials and tribulations. Keep my head above the water in this current. I'll be swimming, and I swear I'm never sinking. And I swear I'm never sinking. This version of me is so temporary.
right, ladies and gentlemen, that was the likes of the matriarch with Modern Dream. It's, I just feel like I think that this is the one day that we deserve a little bit of me, man, speaking my little heart out. But anyhow, ladies and gentlemen, I'm leaving you and I'm bidding you guys farewell. I love you guys forever and a day, and you guys are going to have a pleasant treat. You guys are going to have a little bit of music. You guys are going to have a little bit of music because today is Saturday and we are having a good time and we are in good spirits regardless of what happens in the world where we don't really see what's going on. And, but lately I've been having a song that is on my mind like crazy, but I'm going to play it while we wait for the loading. Hello. How you doing?